The 2010 World Cup has brought an atmosphere of celebration to the cities and towns around South Africa.
All these people are heading over there to enjoy what's been dubbed the biggest party ever held on the African continent.
Almost 500,000 soccer fans are expected to descend upon the 9 host cities of South Africa for the tournament, which runs through July 11th, 2010. Of course, this is a huge win for the nation, which will see billions of dollars of revenue and a priceless investment in local communities, as fans spend money at local restaurants, hotels, and shops, and avail themselves of the many local public services that the country has to offer. But with such a dramatic influx of people comes a price. Locals are looking out for typical crimes like vandalism and mugging, but NGOs and public agencies are also looking out for an increase in crimes that prey on South Africa's vulnerable children. In a country facing high instances of child abuse, rape, and sexual violence towards women, pornography and pathways to abuse are often much too easy to find by way of the internet and mobile phones. The founder of One Network, Nadine Naidu of Visionaries in Africa, was concerned about the potential for the World Cup to bring with it an increase in sexual violence towards children enabled by the media. So, Naidu launched a 30-day multimedia project of her own, coinciding with the World Cup and incorporating video, podcasts, interviews, and a live concert to raise awareness about the dangers facing children. You can follow her work on viausa.org. Naidu sat down with David Weinberger last week to talk about the project.
The mission is really to be able to document the evidence of harm that the World Cup is going to be yielding through traveling sex offenders that will have arrived in our country under the guise of being soccer fans, the neglect that many children will be experiencing through the closure of schools without having anywhere to go. And on the other end of the spectrum, I'm hoping to use the same media and technology channels to expose the amazing work that's being done by people whom I refer to as visionaries in Africa. So I'm hoping to come back with more evidence of good than harm. That is my prayer.
Your interests obviously span more than this particular World Cup series.
The journey began about 15 years ago, just when South Africa, the new South Africa, was born, really, in 1994 when we went into our first election. And I was at that stage trying to work out where I needed to make an input into this new country. And being at university at the time, I was actually in science and had the experience of mobilizing volunteers from the university and from the corporate world to go into townships and to serve. And that experience of bringing people together from different classes and cultural backgrounds and ethnic groups was a mind-blowing experience, really. That experience of people coming together from diverse backgrounds, unified by the act of service, was coupled with a second experience exactly at the same time. And that was the ability to use the local newspaper to produce images of this reconciliation. And I was astounded at how people responded, seeing each other together for the very first time when we had a history of group areas and we were not allowed to actually share the same space, let alone the same photograph in a newspaper. At exactly the same time, pornography was unleashed into South Africa. It was not that it was legal at the time in 1994, but it was the fall of the censorship board. And so at that stage, the international sex industry, as it were, looked at South Africa as a perfect market to distribute pornography of the worst kind. And so we went from a society where we had complete media censorship and we did not have freedom of expression or freedom of speech to being a society where that right was literally removed from our hands because those that had the power to distribute pornography were in a far stronger position than we were. So it's been a 15-year process of trying to use the media for good and expose those positive and wonderful and dignified images of Africans rebuilding the continent by ourselves and with the help from those around us. And on the other side, trying to use the same technology and media to inhibit the abuse of that freedom of speech and expression, especially where the rights of women and children are being severely exploited.
of course, 1994 was about the time that a wave of pornography was unleashed in the developed world because of the embrace of the internet. So you have a particular interest in child pornography.
The interest in child pornography came about through the focus on how media and technology was affecting South Africa negatively. It was not something that I was aware of when I started in media and technology. As you say, 1994, when the internet was starting to be used for the distribution of pornography here, we were still protected from that form of distribution. From 2001, David, one of our public television channels had been broadcasting pornography on late-night viewing for about 3 hours on a Friday and a Saturday night. And that broadcast of pornography was affecting the children who were the most vulnerable. And the evidence of harm was most clearly observed by those that were working in child protection. They were starting to see children acting out what they saw on other children. And so the age of the average rapist in South Africa has gone down year after year. We now have 10-year-olds that are raping 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds that are raping 4-year-olds. And it's not because children are born sexualized. We as a society are sexualizing them. And we as a society is not just the South African society. It is the globe. It is the world. And so from looking at the exposure or looking at the effect of exposure to pornography on children, I then had to take the next steps. And that then led me to the very disturbing discovery that child pornography was being produced within South Africa and around the world.
Just to be clear, the pornography that was being broadcast for 3 hours every night mm-hmm. was not child pornography.
It was not child pornography. And so the broadcasters felt that they were, and they knew that they were not doing anything illegal at the point by broadcasting pornography. And we can get a little bit into the legal loophole that I discovered through that investigation and through this research. But there was a loophole in the law, and so they were not doing anything that was criminal by broadcasting the pornography on television. But the production of child pornography has always been illegal in the South African system. And so we launched the Film and Publications Amendment Bill Coalition, representing more than 6 million people around 2008, in order to fight for a very significant bill, which was the Film and Publications Amendment Bill, to be passed and to be signed off by the president. And unfortunately, we lost the ability to amend that particular to amend the bill to close that loophole. But we did have significant gains in being able to strengthen our fight against child sexual abuse.
Well, what does the bill, what would the bill do?
At this point, some of the amendments to the bill call for greater harmonization between the regulation of media insofar as the requirements of the Sexual Offences Bill. And so clearly the Sexual Offences Bill stipulates that exposure of children to child pornography would be deemed a criminal offense.
I'm sorry, exposure of children to child pornography or to pornography? Or the use of children to create child pornography?
All of those references, David. It's a very, very comprehensive bill. The gains of the bill were to really strengthen all of those gaps that South Africa had not been focused on. And South Africa has been, I should say, one of only 5 countries in the world that has been known to have adequate child pornography laws. And this was identified, South Africa's position was identified around 2006 by the International Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which did a global study looking at child pornography laws around the world. And so whilst on the one hand South Africa has this leading position of having adequate laws, the problems that South Africa face really focus on our inability to implement those laws. So there were a few gains through the signing of this new bill. The biggest failure was the fact that we were unable to close the loophole that gave broadcasters and press the leeway to broadcast and publish any content as they deem appropriate. And so what you have in South Africa is this uneven situation where video distributors and movie theater distributors are regulated in the type of content that they're able to distribute to audiences of all ages. And on the other hand, you've got television, which is free to broadcast pornography. And in many ways, it's almost the same kind of content. And so because of this disharmony in the law, you've got a parent completely frustrated, completely unable to monitor or to, well, he might be able to monitor, but clearly not to be able to prevent the exposure of his child to pornography in the safety of one's own home. And that is something that does not exist even here in the United States. And it's sad to say that this is American-produced pornography being broadcast on South African television. And whilst American parents have the ability to use your filters to prevent the broadcast of pornography in your home, we do not have that same ability in South Africa.
So the filters I think you're referring to are set-top box. You have to enter a password to get to see the dirty movies, right, which is very common among cable companies here. That, I believe, was not required by the government in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer, so I could well be wrong about this. It seems to be a market-driven thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, when there was a government attempt to put in chips that would allow people to turn off overly violent content as well, mm-hmm. That seemed not to go down too well. But the market seems to have wanted those filters enough that the cable companies provide them. Mm-hmm. Different situation in South Africa? The market is not...
It's interesting that you sort of throw the ball back into the court of the market, because the market has been unable to make its voice heard. And it's not that they haven't been speaking. When I went to Parliament in 2007 to represent Visionaries in Africa Foundation and Key Media as an independent producer, it was to say that we as a society and as a constituency want to make our voices heard. But it was really disappointing that I was probably one of only four or five representatives from civil society and the independent media sector. So there was a clear reflection that the market was not either able to speak out or was not given time. And at that point, David, though the bill was in the pipeline for many months, government eventually only gave the South African public 1 month in which to put its submissions together and to make representation at the parliamentary public hearings, which was not nearly enough time that the constituency actually required. On the other hand, at the same hearings, I heard a representative of the Broadcasting Complaints Commission in South Africa, which is an industry-funded self-regulatory body, state that we've noticed a decrease in the number of complaints against adult content on television. It was almost as if to say that, well, the South African public is warming up to this content. In my study afterwards, over the next 2 years at Duke and in South Africa, I discovered that that was not the case. It's not that the South African public is warming up to the pornography and hence we're complaining less. The reality is that the Broadcasting Complaints Commission is biased towards the interest of industry and does not have the interest of the public at heart. And so we can stamp our feet and send thousands of submissions to the Broadcasting Complaints Commission. It is not about to represent the public in the way that it needs to.
So it's easy to imagine, when it comes to broadcast or print for that matter, ways in which regulations could be applied that, because just the nature of broadcast, you can sort of cut it off at the source. The government can regulate it at the source and impose fines if they violate. And certainly we do that in the U.S. I mean, there was the famous wardrobe malfunction, you know, that by itself was enough to generate large fines for broadcasters, an accidental moment of seeing a woman's breast, and that was it. It's easy to figure out how it could work on TV. It's harder to understand what you do about the internet, where controlling what comes across, controlling access in a house, in a school, seems to be far more difficult. What do you propose to do about the widespread availability of pornography, including child pornography, on the internet?
Our laws are pretty comprehensive in South Africa. And in fact, the laws affecting internet service providers were in place around 2006. So in the previous act, they were there. And so the new act doesn't actually call for too many amendments to those provisions.
So internet service providers are required to filter content on the internet. What happens if they miss a spot? Because they're going to, you know, there's going to be some site they don't know about and somebody's going to go to. What sort of enforcement or penalties are there?
So the child pornography offenses with respect to internet service providers in the Fulman Publications Act are, I'm just going to go through a few of them.
These are the existing laws.
Okay. Yes. The failure to take all reasonable steps to prevent the use of their services for the distribution or hosting of child pornography would be an offense. Failure to take all reasonable steps to prevent access to child pornography by any person. Failure to report the presence of child pornography and the details of the person hosting or maintaining or distributing or contributing to such internet address to the police, so withholding information from law enforcement. Failure to take all reasonable steps to preserve evidence of child pornography for purposes of investigation and prosecution. And these are just a few of...
These are all child pornography.
And these refer specifically to...
Are there similar requirements for pornography in general, non-child pornography?
Yes. Pornography in South Africa is actually illegal to be hosted on a South African website and on mobile. So distribution is actually illegal. And this is where the disharmony of the laws and the lack of ability of law enforcement to implement these laws make it so difficult for the consumer out there. So we know that it's illegal to be transferring or transmitting pornography via mobile phones, right? But when these broadcasts go out on national television, in between the programs, there are adverts for mobile distributors of pornography. And so you're watching a broadcast, which is only made possible through a loophole in the law, which the press and broadcasters are severely fighting against. And knowing that this is, you know, it's common sense that if you're going to restrict the kind of content that a video distributor is going to make available, but not restrict the kind of content that a public broadcaster makes available, it's not difficult to see that there's something wrong. And if the very same content that is prohibited for the ordinary blockbuster down the street to be distributing is made available on the public broadcast media, it means that there's something wrong. And while they're aware that something's wrong and that they're getting away with it, they go further to then advertise for mobile downloads of pornography at a cost. In my study, I discovered that aggressive marketing of downloadable pornography on public television was more than simply a channel accepting advertising revenue from an advertiser. This has become so commercially viable for the channel that not only were they benefiting from advertising fees from these content providers, but they had gotten to a point where they were actually sharing all revenues generated from these SMS downloads. And so it made it so lucrative for the channel, they would put in as many of those ads as possible.
As I understand from what you've said, the law is quite specific about requiring ISPs to be vigilant against child pornography. Let's say you manage to close the loophole that allows public TV to broadcast adult pornography. Mm-hmm. You would still, as more and more people are connected to the internet, the access to adult pornography is just going to grow if things are as they are. So are you proposing any type of restrictions or regulations against adult pornography on the internet?
Ideally, we would love to see that there would be that kind of harmonization between, again, what is being broadcast on television and what is being broadcast on the internet, and the fact that more and more South Africans, at least 1,000, have experienced 1,300% increase in internet access and usage, especially via mobile phones. So it would make sense to see that the same content is in some way inhibited or prohibited from access via these new media in the country. Is that we have some of the best laws on the books. Our greatest challenge is the ability to implement those laws. Add to that a couple of other environmental factors. For example, there are a range of issues that don't affect the developed world that do play a role in the developing world. Poverty, HIV and AIDS, a severely disempowered female or child sector, insubordination that happens across the board, whether you're a working or an unemployed woman, whether you're literate or illiterate. So that gender disparity or gender inequality that we have, these are some of the issues that exacerbate the problem that we would face in South Africa. We're exactly almost 10 years behind the developed world in the way that sexual abuse online is being managed. But we're following pretty much the same curve in the way the evidence of harm has been presented in these countries.
So you're going to take advantage of the presence of the World Cup in order to do a broadcast?
I'm hoping that the World Cup intervention is going to allow us to find or track or document some evidence of harm. And in arriving in South Africa, I know I'm going to be amidst more than 300 or 400,000 very happy soccer fans. But in and amongst them, I'm going to be trying to identify those organizations and individuals who are working on the front line of child protection, and to give them a voice and to hear from them as often as I can what is the situation on the ground. I'm hoping that it's going to be a positive one, but we know from some of the research that much of the abuse is going to be under the radar. The dark side of the World Cup is not something that South Africa or the sports journalists are going to be wanting to cover in trying to make it a successful gathering of nations. Much of that content could quite possibly be simply swept under the carpet. So on the one hand, I'm trying to expose those that are trying to protect children during this time, give them positive exposure, give them a chance to speak, allow their voices to be heard. There may be cases where they need to reach out and ask for more help. And because Visionaries in Africa is geared to help bring volunteers to where they are needed the most, perhaps this series of podcasts could reach the ears and the hearts of those who are in a position to help, whether it's at a child safe space area at one of the fan parks, or whether it's at a school where volunteers are needed. We don't know what's actually going to be the case. On the other hand, I'm hoping to give a voice to those visionaries who are overall and outside of the stadiums going to be focused on the millions of South Africans who won't be at the games. It's the bitter cold of winter. It's 15 years after democracy, and the millions of South Africans are still desperately hungry, desperately homeless, desperately in need of care. And so those social entrepreneurs and social activists that are around South Africa who may not have the ability to sit peacefully watching a game will be out there doing their best to keep those communities cared for. And so on the other side, we're hoping that this media and technology platform will give them a voice to be heard as well. And as we look at South Africa and look at the success of it, perhaps this could be part of the social legacy.
Thank you very much, Nadine.
Thanks, David.
Nadine Naidu is an Ashoka Fellow and founder of Visionaries in Africa. Visionaries in Africa plans to host a virtual memorial concert at the end of the World Cup for victims of child exploitation. That's at the beginning of July, for those of you not following the tournament. You can log on to hear the concert live and donate to support VIA's efforts. $10 gets you a free recording of the concert. Just visit www.viausa.org to learn how you can help. Nadine is also producing a daily podcast from the World Cup in South Africa. You can find links to that and more from our site at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. This week's episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.